This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for August 18th, 2005, with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco. Today we'll be talking with two members of a group that's been working for decades to establish and protect Bigelow Preserve in western Maine. Today the preserve is facing new threats. We'll also hear from the Director of Parks and Lands to get their take on the issue. And we'll talk with Matthew Davis from Environment Maine about their group's efforts to protect the state's health and environment from chemicals that are being sprayed on blueberries. And we start first with our three phone guests who will be talking about the Bigelow Preserve in western Maine. Bob Weingarten is a volunteer and is also a member of the board of directors for Friends of Bigelow, and he's been associated with that organization since the mid-1970s, and when he was one of the many volunteers that collected signatures for the citizen referendum that established the preserve. He says that saving the Bigelow Range from ski and real estate development was a great achievement for the people of Maine back then. And his vision now for Bigelow in the future is moving toward a more protected wilderness status. We are also joined by Dick Fecto of that group as well. He's the chairman of Friends of Bigelow. And I believe Dick also joined us about a year ago to talk about some threats that the area was facing at that time. And we are joined as well by Dave Soucy, who was nice enough to respond to our request at the last minute and join this conversation. He is from the Parks. He's a director of the Bureau of Parks and Lands, which is part of the Maine Department of Conservation. And we are hoping to have a conversation with the three of you, hopefully addressing some questions that are being raised about logging of late succession forest that's in the Bigelow Preserve. But let's start by having Dick, if you could give us just a brief history of the Bigelow Preserve, where it is, why it's important, why people have been working since the mid-70s to preserve the area.
Okay, Amy. The Bigelow Preserve is in western Maine. It encompasses three peaks over 4,000 feet in elevation. There's two ponds up on the ridgeline. It's 35,000 acres currently, and it was created in 1976 by a popular referendum, in which over 80,000 Maine voters voted to create the Bigelow Preserve.
And what sort of threat was it under at that time? That
there was a proposal for a development that was going to be called the Aspen Ski Area of the East. And a group of people got together in 1974, formed the Friends of Bigelow, and started a referendum drive.
Right. Some people, you may hear some parallels in this discussion with what's happening in the Moosehead region with Plum Creek now. Bob Weingarten, can you give us a update on what the concerns are today about this particular area? It's not all logging that the Friends of Bigelow Preserve are opposed to, but there's one particular site that is of concern?
Yes, that's right, Amy. This past winter, several of us went on a trek into the preserve on snowshoes. In fact, we went back to twice into that area, which is on the north slope of Little Bigelow Mountain. And we saw some incredible forest area there where there was very large old trees. And we were really concerned because we had understood that the Bureau of Parks and Lands was thinking about doing logging in that area. And if you've been on hikes or out in the woods of Maine, you won't see many big old trees, 150 years old, some of them as big as 30 inches in diameter. And we were especially concerned about this area.
And I'm sorry, before you go any further, we're talking about late successional trees and the distinction about what's late successional tree, what's old growth. I know old growth is not a technical term, so it's more just a descriptive kind of term. But what makes something considered late successional? That's more of a forestry term.
Right. As I've been reading scientific literature, especially from the Amamet Center for Conservation Science, you learn that Lake Successional Forest is a stage of growth preceding old growth, or preceding the end of the particular tree, and it stands of trees that are of a certain size in a certain area, as well as other species that go along with late successional, such as certain kinds of lichen in that area. And the scientists at that center developed a index where you measure how many trees of a certain diameter are in a certain area, and you'll find that they have an index, and that index then qualifies whether the area is late successional or not. And indeed, this area that we're talking about is a late successional forest. It's a forest that is 120 to 200 years old.
And you're talking
and
about 300 acres.
There's not much
acres.
Of that around.
And there's about 300 acres there in your estimation?
Yes. The plan for logging is of 1,000 acres on the north slope of a Little Bigelow. And this, as I understand it, is about 300 acres of that 1,000 acres.
Okay. Let me have you, either Dick or Bob, one of you from the Friends of Bigelow, say what your concern is about the process and the notification process, and then we can have Dave Soucy respond, since he's one of the people from the Bureau of Parks and Lands that you've been having folks who are interested in this issue direct their concerns to. So either Bob Weingartner or Dick Fecteau, if one of you could say what it is that has concerned your group about how this, not only that it's taking place, but the whole process of being notified about it.
I could jump in a little bit on that, and maybe Dick would add to it. The concern is that there's a management planning process going on right now for the Bigelow Preserve. Every 10 years, there's a requirement that the Bureau conduct a major review of what goes on in the preserve and comes out with a new plan. Actually, this plan is about 5 years overdue. The last plan was in 1989. And this planning process just started in March. It was now delayed a bit. And we feel that there's value to waiting for this management planning process to finish its course before the Bureau goes out and starts to log this kind of sensitive area. And we feel that we, as an outside group, but as a public group, have a right to question what's going on there. And when we asked for information about this logging, we were sent eventually the information very late after we asked for it. But at the same time, the Bureau had already hired contractors to go out and do the cutting and logging within that area, which really precluded us getting outside help and assistance on assessing what they were doing.
Dave Soucy, can you respond to that? What was the reason for the delay in getting the information out about what the plans were?
Well, actually, Amy, there was no delay in getting the information out. We had the information in our possession, and it finally worked up our final prescriptions only a few days before we sent that information to the Friends Bigelow. But it's true that as a result of the short time between time that we developed the information, then it got into their hands, that there wasn't an extensive period of time in which they could examine it and comment on it. So they asked us to delay the harvest. What we did in response to that was try to disseminate more information about it. We scheduled a field tour last weekend to go out and invited people up on site to go look and see what we were doing out there. And actually, we have another field tour scheduled in September, or to be scheduled in September. So we're out there trying to make sure that people who want to understand what our plan is in Bigelow can understand that plan.
Has the road building started yet?
As far as I know, it has not, although I haven't checked in this week.
So
it is planned to begin this week or next. And let me explain to you, it's not critical, you know, that if we should delay the harvest for a month or two. But the road building is lined up with a subcontractor who said, in this instance, I can be there for these 2 weeks, but if I can't come these 2 weeks, I can't really come until much later in the season. And so for a whole host of practical reasons, it's fairly important for him to get in and build his road now.
Isn't road building one of the more damaging aspects of logging an area, though, with the possibility of erosion? And
absolutely. And what happens is if he doesn't come in now when it's dry, when the road building conditions are ideal, there's a risk he'll want to come in later during the September and October rainy season that we typically have. And so we'll see more erosion and we'll have much less satisfactory road building conditions. And so we really think it's pretty important if there's going to be road built out there to do it now.
Is there a reason?
Conditions are right.
And is there a reason why it couldn't be delayed until next year to allow for public comment?
Certainly it could be delayed until next year if this was part of the management planning process. But you see, the area that we're harvesting, the late successional stand, where we will be doing a small operation, is part of a much larger late successional stand in Bigelow. In fact, it's the Bureau of Parks and Lands management philosophy and management plan to develop late successional forests across our entire holding. And so, although it might be unusual for industry to be harvesting in a late successional stand, it's not particularly unusual for us. And there isn't anything, frankly, that's stupendous or tremendously out of the ordinary for us to be operating in this field.
Who is the contractor that's going to be doing the harvesting?
I can't tell you his name. I don't have it in front of me. I don't have the contract.
Do you know what their history is of their environmental record in harvesting in this type of in a late successional forest?
Our harvest is supervised very closely by the foresters at the Bureau of Parks and Lands. And this spring, we set up our forestry team for intensive training with the Manomet Center, who are really the experts in late successional forests, so that our team would be fully aware of and fully understand how to go about the very careful type of management that we do in this type of stand. In this instance, only about 30% of the trees are going to be removed. And when they leave, it will still be a late successional forest.
So they're not removing any of the older trees?
Oh, yes, they are. They're removing an equal proportion of older and younger trees. But when they finish the harvest, that area still will properly be characterized as a late successional forest.
Okay, we have just a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to open this up for discussion between the three of you. I know that there have been some questions that the Friends of Bigelow group has had for your office, and I wanted to give Dick Fecto or Bob Weingarten a chance to speak with you, Dave, and to give you a chance to respond publicly.
Okay, Amy, this is Dick.
Dick
First
Fecto.
Of all, Dave, I'd like to say hello, and thanks for coming in on this with us.
Thanks, Dick. Good to talk to you.
Yes. Amy, Friends of Bigelow has never really had concerns about how the department would manage this harvest. We have complete trust in the Bigelow Preserve manager. What we don't know is how much Lake Successional is actually in the Bigelow Preserve. We have not heard from the department, even if they have the numbers on how much. This 300 acres represents less than 1% of the harvestable land in the Bigelow Preserve. And because of that, we think it's pretty unique. And until the Bureau can, you know, show us that they have 50 or 60% of late successional forest within the Bigelow Preserve, we really think they should hold off and have a policy discussion within the management planning process for this harvest.
Dave, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. If we were to do anything other than what we propose to do, we would be setting this land aside as an eco-reserve. Now, in fact, right next to this property is an existing eco-reserve. We have about 10,000 acres of eco-reserve in the Bigelow Preserve. An eco-reserve is an area that we don't touch. We use it as a benchmark, a scientific benchmark, to measure change in the forest. And so if we were to do anything special with this lot, because it's late successional, our inclination would be to put it into eco-reserve status. In fact, we have other land within the Bigelow Preserve has been identified, another 12,000 acres or so, that if we were to do additional eco-reserve, we'd go to that other land. And it doesn't include this particular parcel. The other problem is that we have a statutory cap, the total acreage of eco-reserve that we can designate, and we're very, very close to that statutory cap now.
No, that's a state law that requires the cap?
Yes. What happened was the legislature told us to designate eco-reserves, but they also told us that it could only be a certain percentage of our total land base. And in this case, it works out to about 80,000 acres in total. And so we've designated about 78,000 so far, and we save a little tiny percentage on the end so that we can make adjustments as need be. We will be doing some additional designation to the extent that the law allows. Perhaps some of it will be in Bigelow. Perhaps some of it will be on some of our other land units. There are certainly some excellent candidates for that type of designation. But the bottom line is this particular acreage that we're about to do a harvest on, a very careful managed harvest, is not within that category. What it is, though, as a late successional forest that we can do a careful management operation on, it's an opportunity.
May I respond, Amy?
Yeah, is this Bob Weingarten?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yes. Yeah, and maybe just a quick response, and then we're going to have to wrap up.
Right. So, well, we did a survey of members and supporters of our group, and 75% favor expansion of the eco-reserve within the Bigelow Preserve. And there is room to expand it. Plus, there are other categories, such as non-motorized backcountry recreation, that could be also used to protect some of this land. It doesn't seem that we have to use bureaucratic lingo and obstacles to do this. We can move ahead and protect things. It seems to me that should be the bigger vision for the Bureau, and not just the immediate need to cut trees to make some revenue for its department.
Okay. Well, somebody has to have the last word, and I think that's going to have to be it just because we're out of time. But now at least we have a little bit more awareness of what the discussion is about. Where can people get more information? First, in the Friends of Bigelow, is there a website, phone number, email address?
Sure. They could call either Dick at 0780 or me at 293-3798.
That's Bob Weingarten. And Dave Susie, do you have a phone number that people can reach you if they have questions for you, or how do you prefer to be contacted?
Well, let me suggest that they go to our website. Go to www.maine.gov. Go down to the Department of Conservation, Bureau of Parks and Lands. You'll see on our website our integrated resource policy, which is the way that we decide how we're going to manage our lands. People are welcome to peruse that document. I'm also, in response to this conversation, going to put up on the web some very direct questions and very direct answers by the Bureau to
okay.
the sorts of questions that the friends have asked.
Great. Thank
That'll
you.
Be up in a day or two.
Okay, great. Thank you all three of you for joining us. That's Bob Weingarten and Dick Fecto from Friends of Bigelow and Dave Susie, Director of Bureau of Parks and Lands. And next, we are going to be speaking with Matthew Davis. He's an advocate with the group Environment Maine, and that group, along with the Toxics Action Coalition, have been working to reduce the danger presented to the health of folks in Maine, as well as the health of the environment that's presented by some of the toxic chemicals that are sprayed on blueberries in the state. Matthew Davis, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And if you could, we're running a little bit short on time, but I know you've made an announcement recently, your groups have together, about a petition for some rule changes with the Boards of Pesticide Control. So if you could tell us about that.
That's right, Amy. We're working on on four common sense protections to help protect public health and the environment. These are rule changes before the Board of Pesticide Control. The first one would phase out aerial pesticide spraying from helicopters and airplanes. The second one would phase out the most toxic of these chemicals, the organophosphates. The third one would require monitoring of pesticide spraying drift so that we know the pesticides are getting off the fields. We want to see how much they're getting off the fields and into people's houses and land. And then the last one is for there to be no fee to get on the pesticide registry so that the public can be contacted about sprayings in their neighborhood and not have to pay $20 a year to do that.
Can you say, do you have the information in front of you of how people do get in touch to find out about that registry?
they can go to the Board of Pesticide Control website or give a call to the Board of Pesticide Control. I don't have their number right in front of me.
Okay. Yeah, we can get that information on another program. We've been covering this issue some this summer, and I just thought maybe you'd have the number in front of you. I don't have it in front of me right now, but we have had concerns in this area in recent weeks about some of the spraying that's been going on and some reports that glutathione was being sprayed. What is the concern in terms of health with the chemicals that are being sprayed? What kinds of health problems do they present?
Well, a full range of health problems. Some of them are highly toxic in small amounts. We kind of have acute toxicity. Some of them are carcinogens, or either known carcinogens or possible carcinogens. And then there are also some that affect developmental development in humans and pose developmental problems. So there's really the full spectrum. And then in terms of their effect on the environment, a lot of the chemicals, about 62% of them, are toxic to aquatic life. And, of course, some of these chemicals are getting into our waterways and threatening the health there of our of the ecosystems in the waterways.
And when we reported on this issue last, we were told that if people were concerned about what was being sprayed in their area, that they should close their windows. So in your petition to the Board of Pesticide Control, what is the next step in that, and are you asking people to call and express their opinion, or how can the public be involved in that?
Yeah, right now we are collecting signatures from registered Maine voters to initiate the rule change process. We will likely be at the Common Ground Country Fair collecting those signatures, and you may actually have folks in your neighborhood who are working with us. We have a number of active citizens around the state working to collect those signatures. It's not that many, so we should be able to do that with just a little bit more effort. And then we would have a public hearing after that that the Board of Pesticide Control would schedule. So members of the public could get involved at that point as well.
Okay. Website, phone number, email address?
Yeah, www.environmentmaine.org or toxicsactioncenter.org. You can give a call to 253-1965. That's our office. And or you can email info@environmentmaine.org.
Thank you very much for joining us today, and we'll continue to cover this issue. That was That was Matthew Davis of Environment Maine. And next we are going to go to a poem that was done by Earth First Warrior poet Matthew Hahn about 10 years ago. People who worked on the Sears Island issue here in Maine back in the mid-90s may remember Matthew Hahn. He died last month in a hiking accident in Utah.
Oh, Freddy Ranger blazed the road, unleashing sedimentation. Threw some straw bales down on top and called it mitigation. Yeah! Now welcome to the great land of Idaho, where there's some long-time locals just dying to know where did the rights to their land and water go. That's what the Nez Perce were wondering not so long ago. Well, we didn't want hostile engines to bore us, so now we got the Nez Perce National Forest, where there's a huge chunk of land that's sort of safe from attack. But there is one living heart in there, kind of slipped through the cracks. And it isn't just the loggers who are feeling the lack. The gray wolf and salmon are dying to come back. Now, they used to have this doctrine called multiple use, but in practice, it turned out to be a little obtuse, because while some dumbass nature lover might leave a candy wrapper, some dumbass with a chainsaw sends the whole thing down the crapper. So now, they want to demonstrate a more environmental bent, and the big buzzword now is ecosystem management. Now, the word management has been theirs all along, but the word ecosystem, hey, that used to be our song. Now, I've never doubted their devotion to management, but it's clear they don't know what ecosystem means yet. It doesn't mean wiping out virgin stands so you can have virgin paper for your king forest plans, where you neutralize watersheds, streams, and lakes with dozers, chainsaws, and survey stakes to manifest some vision of gouged and ugly. Export the logs and watch the locals go hungry. No, that's not what ecosystem means. Now come down for a minute and come off of your machines. And I don't care if you hate us or even ignore us, but come and take a look at what happens in the forest. Look at that huge old snag, bereft of living crown. It's gonna take centuries to bring that mother down. And for the bugs that live there and the woodpeckers that eat them, now you take that wood away and that's a nasty way to cheat them. Because that tree has drawn its life from the soil rich and black. Now it has given up its life and it's going to give it back. And when some sweet little sapling comes popping through the dust and sees that great mother towering in the air, then it knows where the sweetness at its roots came from. It knows the legacy that it will one day bear. Yeah, now this is true climax forest here. And I tell you this without a doubt. And things take a long, long time in the forest. And that's what true climax is all about. So while you're taking off on your road building tizzy, cause we've got to have jobs and be busy, 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 and you rip those giving mothers right out of the ground and drag them off bleeding to the dead tree impound. Now haul them down the highway, stripped and dead, so they can see your cities. Sickening. Now, that's not what ecosystem means. It means this land is alive and well and kicking. Now, a man of authority once told me for sure that I was being young and stupid, and one day I would mature to accept the plunder of this sweet living land, as long as I could pay off my condo and my van. Well, my elders taught me to be a little more discreet. We may be young and stupid, but by goddess, we're on our feet. So load up on donuts, boy. Good. You're gonna need that sugar rush to run me down in these woods. Can haul me down the highway, mugged and cuffed, so I can see your system. Sickening. And I'll tell you what ecosystem means. This land is alive and well and kicking!
That's Earth First warrior poet Matthew Hahn, died last month in a hiking accident in Utah. This show is dedicated to Matthew's memory. And you've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco. Andy Buckley does web and technical support. Joel Mann engineered today's program. Our website is radioactivenews.org. And please support local and national and international independent news here on your community radio station by making a pledge, 1-800-643-6273 or 469-6600. Renee Klucke and Marty Duncan are waiting for your phone calls, and we could surely use your support. 1-800-643-6273. Thank you.